Both the Legislative Advisory Board and the Stakeholders Advisory Board were created by Executive Order 2020-6. That order is publicly available on the government's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of both boards. It's open to the public and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. We are taking minutes, which will be posted to the Gopher webpage. Today's meeting, as we've said, is also being recorded. Should you be a speaking participant and not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect now or at any time.
Okay.
My name is Jerry Little. I am Director of the Governor's Office for Relief and Recovery, and I will be facilitating today's meeting. Because the board is meeting by phone under RSA 91A, there are some logistics we need to establish. First, we need to state our names, where we are located, and who is with us in the room. Today, for this joint meeting of the Legislative Advisory Board and the Stakeholders Advisory Board, I will run through the roll call for the Legislative Advisory Board first, and then I'll hand it off to Joe Dorian, who will run through the roll call for the Stakeholders Advisory Board. And we do have one special request today. For whatever technical reason we're not aware of, not all of the speaker call-in lines are populating today. So when we call your name, if you would please hit 5-star, that will allow us to identify which phone line you are calling in on. I am Jerry Little, Director of the Gopher, in the Gopher office at One Eagle Square on Main Street in Concord. In the room with me are Joe Dorian, Rhonda Hensley, Paige Chiquinto, Lisa English, and Wendy Gilman. President Donna Soucy.
This is Donna Soucy. I am at my home in Manchester, and I am alone.
Very good. We heard you, but we were not able to identify what line you're calling in on. President Soucy, could you hit 5-star, please? There we go. We've got you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Certainly.
House Speaker Steve Shurtleff?
Steve Shurtleff. I'm at my cabin in Bethlehem, and I am alone.
Thank you, sir. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Morse.
Chuck Morse. I'm at my office in Atkinson, and I am alone.
House Minority Leader Dick Hinch.
This is Dick Hinch. I'm in my office in Merrimack, and I am alone.
Thank you, sir. Chairman Lou D'Alessandro. Senator D'Alessandro, are you with us, sir? Very good. We see your raised hand. If you could just take your phone off mute, maybe, and tell us where you are.
Okay, you got it? Lou D'Alessandro.
We got you.
All right, super. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Chairwoman Mary Jane Wallner.
Mary Jane Wallner. I'm at my home in Concord, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Senator John Reagan.
John Reagan, I'm at my office by myself.
Thank you, sir. Representative Aaron Hennessy.
Aaron Hennessy, I'm at my house in Littleton. I'm alone in the room.
Thank you. Joe Dorian will now do the roll call for the Stakeholders Advisory Board.
Thank you. And again, if members of the Stakeholder Advisory Board could hit 5-star when I call your name, and I'll be going alphabetical. Bill Ardinger.
Hello, Joe. This is Bill Ardinger. Hello to everyone. I'm glad to hear your voices. I'm at my home in Concord, New Hampshire. I'm alone.
Thank you, Bill. Dean Kristen.
Joe, it's Donna Lee.
Yeah.
Dean emailed us that he can hear us, but he can't free up
push the code's not working for him to be able to be heard, but he is listening.
Great. If Dean, if you could hit 5-star, we might be able to assist with that technical difficulty. Great. Well, again, 5-star D. There we go. I think we got you. Dean, could you try it now for us, please?
Sure. This is Dean Kristen. I am at my office in Bedford, and I am alone.
Thank you for your patience, Dean. Lisa Dravick.
This is Lisa Dravick. Sorry. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm at my home office in Londonderry, alone in the room.
Thank you, Lisa. Jim Jalbert.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jim Jalbert, and I'm at my office in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Thank you, Jim. Amy LaBelle.
This is Amy LaBelle. Can you all hear me?
We can hear you.
Wonderful. Amy LaBelle. I'm in my home office in Amherst, New Hampshire.
Thank you, Amy. Al Letizio, Jr.
Hi, this is Al Letizio, Jr. I am in my office in Windham, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Thank you, Al. Donnelly Lozo.
Hi, this is Donnelly Lozo. I am in my office in Manchester, and I am alone.
Thank you, Donnelly. Scott Mason.
This is Scott Mason. I am in my farm office in North Stratford, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Thank you, Scott. Nichelle McEwen.
Hi, this is Michelle McEwen. I'm in my office in Plymouth, and I am alone.
Thank you, Michelle. Nancy Merrill.
Hi, this is Nancy Merrill, and I am at my work office in Claremont, and I am alone.
Thank you, Nancy. Jeffrey Myers.
Jeff Myers. I am in my home in Concord, and I am alone.
Thank you, Jeff. Holly Noveletsky.
I'm Holly Noveletsky. I'm in my office in Greenland, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Holly, could you hit 5-star for us, please?
Can you see that? Because I've done it twice now.
Thank you, Holly. Kathleen Reardon.
Hi, this is Kathleen Reardon. I'm in my home office in New Boston.
Thank you, Kathleen. Benjamin Wilcox.
Hi, this is Ben Wilcox, and I am in North Conway, New Hampshire, at my office at Cranmore Mountain Resort, and I am alone in my office.
Thank you, Ben. Director Little, that concludes the roll call with all staff members in attendance.
Thank you very much, Joe. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Just as a matter of course, if you choose to speak or would wish to speak, hit 5-star to let us know that you're queued up and have a comment or a question. And then please identify yourself before beginning to speak. Finally, should either of the boards choose to take any votes today, they're going to need to be done using the roll calls in a manner that we just exercise. This is the first joint meeting of the Legislative and the Stakeholder Advisory Boards. My understanding is that the chairs of each board, Senator Morris, and Donnelly Lozo have spoken, and that we're going to start today with brief presentations from each chair about their board and their status. Senator Morse, are you leading off?
Sure. Donnelly, thank you for agreeing to get together. I think the challenges of working remote like this, we can't see your smiling face, but you definitely have a distinguished group working with you, which we miss them dearly. I believe you all heard that the Senate President and the Speaker are on the phone. I'm only chairing this on our side just to basically develop something that we can have a conversation with. And I think as we put out our document, the document was meant to be interactive based on everything that's pretty fluid between the state of New Hampshire and the federal government. So as you get to see our document, you certainly can click on a lot of different categories and find out where the federal funding is going and where the state funding is going. The purpose of doing that was so that I pretty much think in, some 20 hours of meeting, we're getting a good sense of what people believe are priorities in the state of New Hampshire, whether it's the federal government or the governor himself in the state of New Hampshire. And with saying that, I think our document, if you scroll to the bottom of it, it certainly shows that $255 million has already been appropriated by the executive branch. And what we've proposed to date is another $330 million on top of that. Now, that'll change. I'm sure it'll change. And our commission should stay on the phone after we get through this 45-minute call, because we certainly have things to go over today. But we were proposing originally through a series of debates that we fund somewhere around 45% of the $1.25 billion now. And I'm sure we'll have discussions later this afternoon whether that's enough or whether it's too much. But having said that, I think what we're hearing each and every time we interview a new group, which is showing up on this document, is what the legislature, I think, is very good at, is what priorities are needed today. And that's why I think the document certainly points to, let's get this money out, and let's come back and come back and come back and continue to listen to the people in New Hampshire so that we can essentially do what I believe Donna Lee and your group is doing, and that work out the intended use section of our document. Because as we talk to different groups, I think everyone believes there's better ways than the state being the group that controls the money once we make this allocation. We've all talked about BFA as one of them, New Hampshire Charities as another. I think when we look at intended use in our document, we're certainly talking about who should fall under each category and who should be the group that's in charge. As Donna Lee speaks after myself, I think you've been working on a lot of that, and that's why I thought it'd be good to get together and talk about what you're seeing as maybe the groups that should be in control of this money once it leaves our hands. And along with that, I think there's been a lot of discussion about what uses are acceptable based on federal guidance. That continues to get updated. We did put at the bottom of our document things that keep coming up that we believe we need to come back to as we get into another month, whether we're going to cable the state of New Hampshire or not. I think that's an issue that keeps coming up So I think we've, in our document, we've noted that, and we've certainly said it's something we want to talk about, but there's priorities that need to get out the door right away. We've dealt a lot with the numbers, and the numbers used to have a ranking column in there. After our first meeting, it was pretty obvious you don't need to do that. You can see what the rankings are based on the level of funding we're putting in there. Excuse me. So I think it's a good guide to hand to the executive branch as to where our advisory board thinks the funding should go to first, and then I think it becomes what else is going to hit us. When we put out this round, you know, obviously the governor put out $255 million. If there's agreement to go forward from the executive branch with some of the things we're suggesting, I think that starts to trigger where we'll start to hear further debate in the state of New Hampshire about what we need to do more of. And we certainly at this point don't know how much more federal funding is coming our way. So I think that's all the process of learning. But the interactive document seems to be working for that debate. I can tell you I have two proposals in front of me right now from a pretty distinguished group that certainly sees things different than our document right now. So that'll all be debated, and that's what's good about this document. And it's a starting point, and I certainly think the amount of work that went into it so far has been great. And I think not only is Jerry listening to us all the time, because I believe he's the one making the recommendations or his group to the executive branch, I think the public is, because the letters are coming in fast and furious to the 8-member commission about things that they want us to hear. So I think it's working. I look forward to hearing from Donna Lee, and then we would like to take your questions after that.
Thank you, Senator Morse. Donna Lee.
Thank you, Senator. I very much appreciate it. I do think that it's probably time for us to touch base and see which direction both of us are heading in. For our group, we began by looking at developing a list of specific questions that we wanted to send out to different sectors in our state to try to get to some assistance with a systematic approach, kind of the logistics of things, the operational issues that businesses and others are facing, so that we could try to get our arms around how could we do this. We have had we meet twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We try to limit our meetings to just a couple of hours. We have had each day, with the exception of this past Tuesday, presentations from different sectors, cross-sector day of businesses, which included some nonprofits, a day of nonprofits. Yesterday, we had a day around housing. Coming up, we have a day for healthcare, a day for agriculture, a day for hospitality and tourism. And it has helped inform our work by the specific questions that we have asked. So we asked them, basically, what are you up against? What's the, you know, situation right now for an immediate need? What do you see as recovery? And how do you see this helping, you know, in the long term? And I think that that's helped focus our work. One of the benefits of our group, I think, is all of the members on our group have a wide network of people, both from the sector that they work in, as well as, like all of us on the phone today, our friends and neighbors who also live and work in our state. And so they've reached out to a broad range of people asking for their responses. We've received probably close to 100 now responses most of which are now posted on the website for people to be able to take a look at. And we made our first recommendation on Tuesday after a lengthy discussion, utilizing a PowerPoint that I shared with you and that is also posted on the website on under May 5th, a discussion template to just, again, set the table about, you know, what has Congress enacted so far? How do the funds break down by the legislation passed as well as the program type? And where do we focus on, you know, the CARES Act? And what's New Hampshire's allocations of federal funding? Which brought us to that discussion that you mentioned as well, a conclusion that I think many of us have come to, which is how do we distribute these funds as quickly, efficiently, transparently, and accountable as possible, which led us to slide six, which I like to say the recommendation that we passed on Tuesday is the narrative of the map on page six, which does identify the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, the BFA, the Regional Economic Development Corporations, Housing Authority, different groups to be able who are in these roles currently, pre-COVID, to use their expertise and their sources of ways to get the money out the way that we determine. We have had some additional conversations around the work that you have done. I've shared your Excel sheet with the members of our board just to be able to show the approach that you're taking. So from my perspective, when I look at the work that your group is doing, it is the work of policymakers saying, let's look at sectors, let's look at dollars, let's see if we're going to prioritize. You have opened up the presentations that people have done before you to basically be what do they want to tell you, which I think is very much the policymaker in all of you. In our group, I think there is, as I said, that operational look at things. So we are going to revisit conversations around the timing of distributions, the conditions that might be on them, whether applications will be reviewed. One of the things that has come up in our discussions is administrative costs of getting the money out. I think we all recognize that there's no single pipe in the state that's big enough to get all of this out quickly and efficiently. So we will continue to have our presentations and to we've now put on our agenda a standing item for an update from Gopher on what's happening within your group, what's happening within the reopening group, and you know, a discussion on recommendations going forward. There's a lot of discussion in our group about looking at sectors and whether or not we want to give dollar amounts in those sectors. I do think that we would like to see some money get out immediately for those that need it right now. We talk in terms a lot of, you know, like a trauma patient, right, where the state's kind of in this crisis and you want to stop the bleed and then you want to look at what recovery looks like. You know, there's different stages of that. And then how do you come out on the other side and what are the changes moving forward? So I think it's great that we're all looking in a way that's trying to be flexible. We've talked about trying to mitigate as much as we can unintended consequences of decisions we make. And I know that my group is ready to talk more specifically about what are some of the immediate categories. And by looking at your spreadsheet, seeing how we line up with some of what you've done and whether we would add to those recommendations or support those recommendations or, you know, add more operational information. The last thing I'll point out is we talked about the value of getting funding out to the entities that support the groups that we've talked about being distribution entities. So, for example, the BFA works closely with the Regional Economic Development Councils as well as probably the SBDC. The New Hampshire Charitable Foundation would work closely with the Center for Nonprofits. all of those advisory groups that will help to have people come in with their best possible plan for their application to help ensure as much success as possible once they get through the process. And so looking at getting funds out to all of those organizations for capacity building, and not to leave out the state and some of those systems in place. And I'll use, for example, something I'm very familiar with, which is the work at DHHS that is being done around child care in all different looks. So child care as far as caring for children while their parents are working, along with children that are subject, sadly, to abuse and neglect or victims of crime, that kind of work. And the money that has come in that has been going out that quickly got up emergency child care throughout the state. So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, and a lot of lessons that can be learned. And I think if we keep rowing in the same direction, we can probably do a heck of a job getting this work done. So thank you for the invitation, and I hope I've given as clear a picture as I can about our work. It's certainly not comprehensive, but enough to give you a sense, I hope.
Thank you, Donna Lee. Senator Morris, do you have a question or comment? Senator Morris, I believe your hand is up.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's a mute button. I was trying to eat lunch and do this work at the same time. Now, the question is if Donna Lee could give us maybe what her committee is looking at on the, you know, we got $1.25 billion. You know, I'm certain that the debate is should it all be spent today and hope the federal government is going to come in with more help, or have they talked about the future of this money?
Well, Senator Morse, I certainly can't speak for all of us because we have not yet taken a formal vote on our approach to that, but I know that there's a fair amount of members on the committee based on our discussion that would like to get some money out for the immediacy right now. What are some of those basic needs, you know, housing, food, you know, that type of thing. Small businesses or, you know, that kind of thing. And then feeling like if we could get some of that out the door, we could then look at what's next. I'm sure that there are some members that may feel that maybe a lot of the money should be spent right away. I don't know that that's a majority of the group yet, but I know that everybody likely has an opinion about what that might look like and how that might get out the door. But I think right now our next conversation is probably going to be around that and what do we need to do right away or recommend right away that should happen. We talked a little bit about should some of that match the reopening. So, for example, you know, if hair salons are opening in a week, are those businesses ready? Do they have what they need? Have they had the funding? So we've talked about whether that timing is important. But we have not taken a formal position yet about that timing. I can tell you personally, I'm a fan of, I know there's a deadline of December 31st. I'm not convinced it's clear on what the spend means for that, but I do think that that there is a value to getting some work done right now and then looking at what the results of some of that are as we're working towards the next batch of money going out. So I would see it in at least more than one phase myself personally. And I'm sure that members, you know, could weigh in if they feel strongly differently than I've just described.
Thank you.
Other questions for either Senator Morris or Donna Lee Loza? If you have a question, if you would hit 5-star, we'll know to unmute your line. don't see any requests. Oh, just saw something. We'll scroll down a little bit. Pull up. Amy LaBelle, please.
Yes, thank you. I'll be brief. My quick question is relative to the distribution channels and whether or not we have zoned in on using existing state channels, or if we are open to using a banking institution who might have, you know, more speed to market power.
Well, I'll take a stab at that. I think the we're all trying to find channels. I believe the Gopher office is receiving documents probably on a daily basis where proposals are coming in to be the channel. And whether it's the nonprofit coming in and saying, this is what we're proposing for, you know, us being able to do the distribution process. I know on your committee, Bill Ardinger, I spoke with him for a while. I actually read a document that was sent to me that kind of took all the different programs at BFA that could possibly be worked through. As for the banking industry, we've certainly been in communication with them when we talked about the payroll protection plan, about how you could take, you know, and grab, teach businesses to file for this, and I think that works. I mean, I think on our document it shows the $2 billion that came to New Hampshire so far. So, yes, I do think the theory is to find the right organization to work with. We've certainly been watching what your committee is doing about that, and I think that, like I said, it's, if we're going to build out our document, which is a work in progress, it's the intended use and where we could best park this money. Along with that, I'll give you an example of where I don't think that's necessary. If you, we're going to have discussions today, I'm sure, about hospitals. More and more I'm hearing from them where, you know, cash flow is going to become an issue. Can we build a system as a state to look at so that we can make that distribution, you know, straight to them immediately? So I think all these things are things we're all working on, and I think the right place for all that to end up is at Gopher and Jerry's office, and then he's certainly talking about it with a whole bunch of people.
Thank you. Senator Morse, did you raise your hand for another comment beyond that response to Ms. LaBelle?
No, I didn't think anyone else was going to ask a question or say anything. I just, Donna Lee alluded to the fact that we're legislators. I seem to remember when she was teaching me, that was a little while ago. But the reality is I do think we look at things differently than the private sector does, and I think that's what's great about these two groups working right now. So I think it probably benefits both of us to look at each other's work as we move along here. I think you'll learn something from each group, to be honest with you. I think that's important.
Thank you, Senator Morse. We have a question from Jim Jalbert.
This is a question for both Donna Lee and Senator Morse, and the question would be, do you both expect us to work in our respective groups and then come back with suggestions related to the legislative advisory board proposal, or do you want any comments at this time?
Donna, do you?
Well, thank you, Senator. I think, Jim, today's the point of us talking today was to just have a better sense of where each of us are or how each of us are doing our work, I guess, the approach.
Okay.
But I do want to just follow up on a couple of things. I think exactly as Senator Morse said, there's a benefit to the perspective that our group has, which is different than the perspective of the legislative group. and the value of both groups, I think, is really going to shine as we complete some of this work. And in that very first spot where I think that it is showing that both groups see a value in something, which is this distribution entities, the systems that we've talked about, being the way to do this work, I think it's a huge plus that we both feel that same way, both groups, and understand the value of it. So I think there may be more of that as it comes along. I wouldn't want to be in a place where I comment on the legislative work on whether they should or shouldn't have done something or their approach is different. But I think there's an opportunity to come back together in another joint meeting at some point, maybe after a little bit of time has passed and we see the recommendations that are actually utilized from the two groups taking place, that it might be, again, valuable. I think it's so hard to, if we listen to each other's work every day, that's all we would do, because, as you know, the legislative group meets 3 days a week. We meet 2 days a week. And pretty much everybody, I think, in both groups is not just wearing that hat in their life. You know, they're running their business. They're worrying about their family, and they're operating in an unusual way, which sometimes means it's more work instead of less work. And, of course, when we're not in the meeting, we're still hearing, as Senator Morse mentioned, people are calling us, emailing us, making suggestions, sending more information. And I think all of that input is helpful, and there needs to be time to be able to really read through everything and give it some thoughtful reflection. So I think this is just a first courtesy conversation, and I appreciate the group willing to ask us to attend.
Well, certainly it wasn't to critique anything at all, and I am very grateful that both groups are together and that we get to meet and chat with the Legislative Advisory Board. And it was merely suggestions, but we can certainly do that in our respective committees, Donnelly, and I'm happy to yield back.
Thank you.
I don't think anyone took it any different. When you're in the legislature, you got broad shoulders anyway. So I think the interesting thing is I believe others are listening to every word that comes out of the two committees.
Sure.
$255 million's already been appropriated. If you go with a belief that I believe in, you're probably $300 million away in the first round of appropriation. Now, I know there's been debate on that, whether it's enough, whether it's not, but I think what you're learning and what we're learning will be in that $300-400 million range of where the executive branch is learning from us. So, and they're doing their own work because I don't, every time I make a phone call to someone, they've already told me that people in the governor's office have beat me to it. So I think everybody's doing what they have to research where things are needed. And I do believe there's some level of appropriation. That's why I asked the question that needs to get out right away. And we'll see where that goes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jobber. Thank you, Senator Morris. Our next question is from Holly Novoletsky.
Thank you very much. I noticed on the proposal from the LAB that there were proposed spending dates. Are those dates that you plan to get the money out by? And also, would it be beneficial if we had set at least the initial deadline for spending that we could both work towards for critical needs where people really are hurting now and they're looking for money?
Yeah, those dates that are in the documents that from our committee were merely to start a debate. It was twofold. One, I'm sure all these expenditures are going to get reviewed not only by our group but by the public. And in Jerry's case, he's going to be the one auditing all those, I believe. So, we basically thought maybe it made sense to come back at certain points in time. Now, our group, definitely some people want to put more out now, and
so on and so forth. But that's why that number was there, and the dates were there, so that we basically had a discussion about exactly that. How much do we want to come back and deal with each and every month or week? Or, you know, I think that's the key. So I'm sure the governor's office is listening to what both groups are saying on that, you know. They'll make up their own mind, though, and I've made that clear to our committee. So I think merely the hard work of all these people is what they're listening to, and then they'll make a decision.
They'll make the decision as to the first allocation date? Is that what you mean?
They've already made that decision. They have $255 million working already. That's out there, and if you go into the column under the governor's allocation, you can click on any one of those numbers and see what's been allocated. Our committee has spent a lot of time talking about the health care button, where there's $50 million, and I believe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, about $20 million of that's already out in the public. We're concerned that the other $30 million needs to get out, and I think that's part of the debate we'll probably have this afternoon, because we're hearing from the hospitals especially that cash flow is starting to be an issue. So, you know, the governor's office, I think, is already working to spend this money while we do all our debates.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for either Speaker Morse or Chairwoman Donnelly Loza? I don't see any. I'll give you just a couple more seconds to raise your hand using 5-star if you have a question for either of them. All right. Well, thank you both, Donnelly and Senator Morse, for that conversation, and for everybody on both boards for joining us for the joint meeting. At this point, we will move forward with the agenda for the legislative advisory board. And the next item on our agenda, Senate President Susi, is discussion of the draft letter that you have forwarded to everyone as the cover to send to Governor Sununu with the spreadsheet that you've just been discussing. Senator Susi, are you there? And members of the SAB, you're welcome to stay with us. It's a public meeting, or you're welcome to jump off. It is your call as to how you spend the rest of your afternoon. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks again for inviting us.
Senator Susi, are you with us?
Yeah. Commissioner Little, I am just scanning through because I've lost internet service at home. So luckily I'm doing it from a phone, so it's a little bit smaller. As you can see, the draft letter has all of the areas of discussion that we have had to date that are part of the spreadsheet. You'll also note that the funding amounts were left blank, figuring that we would go through the sheet one more time and finalize those numbers. So once the committee has completed that, we can add those back in, I think, fairly quickly. This was an attempt to sort of capture our top line concerns, and I will leave it at that. I'm happy to discuss any questions or concerns people may have.
Thank you for the overview. Are there questions for Senator Susi? Senator Morse, please.
Thank you, Dave. Senator, thank you for what you did with this document. The third paragraph from the bottom where it says, perhaps the most important our spending proposal also stabilizes. Can you tell me what the intent of that paragraph is, or just tell me. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to be plugging in for a number there.
This was, and I, as I said, sorry, I don't have the spreadsheet open in front of me, but this was about covering the existing, the set-aside number and also covering the funds that are already expended. So, for example, the two announcements the governor most recently made about municipal aid and first responders, this is to cover that. So to recognize expended that have already occurred,
which I would agree with that. I was trying to figure out
and the set aside number as well. So expenditures that have already occurred, if we're going to set aside for the budget.
Yeah, that's the number that I'm not sure I'm prepared to support right now until I understand if we can legally do it, I'm not sure that we're not getting federal funding in a different bucket for that. That was the paragraph that, you know, in this letter that I was concerned about, but only concerned about if we're alluding to what's already been proposed in the document, I think it's the right way to do it. If we're going to talk about what we're taking out of this 1.24, the budget, I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
I think it's primarily, and perhaps we could rephrase it or edit the language a bit, but I think it's particularly important for the funds that were expended before we got the CARES Act funds and that we use general fund dollars for. I think that's what we were trying to get at there. And that number should be quantifiable.
And if I'm correct, our document right now quantifies it. So I could support that. It's just the and I know as we go through the document today, I don't want to shock you all with. The requests from, you know, everyone, but the you know, some of the items, in my opinion, if we're gonna, I think I've heard the urgency thing, and I'm in the urgency category, and matter of fact, I'm gonna make a proposal in a minute that one of the items that I was working on, yet put out to, you know, future discussion, I think the urgency thing has to get across, and whether that's today or next week, that's up to the committee. But I certainly believe, you know, the intensity of the letters and phone calls that are coming in. I'm sure all of you are getting the same thing. You can tell it's getting tight, and I don't. You know, like I said the other day, you're talking about food on the table and roofs over their head at this point. You know, some categories we don't have enough information on yet, but there's certainly some groups that I think we have enough to move forward.
Senator Morris, I would agree, and I envision the work of this committee continuing. Not just for the existing funds, but obviously for the potential of additional federal funds. But I think we do need to identify certain key areas that should go out the door immediately and then continue to work through the other areas as well.
Yeah, I'm in that category. I agree with you. So, in general, 99% agreement with the letter, the way it's been written. I just didn't know what number was being put in that paragraph, and
As we get through the document today, I think whether I can support that paragraph or not, we should talk about. I mean, it's other than that, I think the document will, you know, tie to the letter, and I think most of us believe this funding should go out now. I think that's probably a positive thing. Let me go back to the our original document, if everyone's comfortable with that. Don't nod. I can't see it.
Yeah, we are comfortable with that.
Senator Susan, may I just ask a quick question for, this is Jerry Little, for clarification.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that I understand the conversation and the answer about that third paragraph from the end. Are you anticipating that the blank in that paragraph, looking for a dollar amount, that dollar amount includes an amount that we'd like to hold for basically the fourth quarter of 2020 for unanticipated problems that may arise, plus the funds that have already been expended initially of general funds, but which have now been backfilled with CARES Act dollars? Is that the figure that you're looking for there?
Commissioner, I believe it can be both. I think that the first most critical number, though, is the number to cover funds already expended or allocated. And then if we do make changes to the document from where we're at, we could then conceivably add either a second number or add to that number funds that we anticipate spending later. But at the very least, I think that number needs to represent what has already been expended by the governor in general fund dollars that we would hope to recapture using some of these funds.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Thank you. Sorry to interject.
No. It's important that everybody have a clear understanding, and I'm hopeful that it's a letter I tried to, with help, tried to make it more of a template so that the narrative would describe what we're doing, and then recognizing that we're going to have discussions now to either confirm or amend some of the numbers that we have already placed into the working spreadsheet. So it was an attempt to capture all of that, and recognizing it's going to require final edits before it can be presented.
Thank you. Senator Morse, I believe you were asking if we could go to the document next.
Yes. The if you go into unemployment, I think it's at this point, I think the discussion on unemployment has been positive, to be honest with you, but I believe that's one item that we should move to future discussion. I don't know that the $50 million is needed right now, quite honestly, and I certainly am headed in the direction of let's build a document that we believe needs to get out today and send that message. So this number I would take out of here. I mean, I certainly believe it, in my opinion, it should go into the nonprofits after listening to all of you and everyone else. There's certainly been a lot of proposals for spending it. But in any case, I think we could take the unemployment and move it down to the bottom of the document for future discussion, and the use the $50 million. My opinion is to stay somewhere in that 45% range. I mean, I know there's other opinions, but having said that, if we did that, I would move this money into nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
Are you recommending moving all of it into nonprofits or a portion?
Well, if I move it all into nonprofits, that basically puts that number at $65 million besides what we suggested. And I even debated this. I mean, I'm not – the food bank, I mean, we're singling out one group. I mean, I think we all believe they need help. But, you know, in general, we're just sending the message to the executive branch that nonprofits should get X. $65 million is not $125 million, obviously, that I heard the other day. But, again, you can always come back to it. I mean, I think $65 million is a lot of money, even for charities to deal with right now. So I was suggesting we move it all there.
Questions or comments? If I can restate, I believe what I just wrote down, Senator Morris, is a proposal to move $50 million in the unemployment trust fund shortfall from there to the nonprofit sector, adding it to the $15 million in that category.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, I think we can go through the documents. That's probably not what I would do first. The first thing I would do is move unemployment, the $50 million discussion down to, I don't want to take it away completely. I think it's to go with a future discussion that, you know, unemployment trust fund, you know, shoring it up. And I think that's an important piece to move it out of this document and put it down in things to be, you know, talked about afterwards.
Jerry, no, Lou Delascino, I think that's reasonable. I spoke with Commissioner Kapatas today about the unemployment fund and about the drawdown that's taking place. He mentioned even though the pressure on our fund is severe, we're still in pretty good shape as compared to others. California is broke. They've drained all of their unemployment fund, and will begin borrowing from the federal government. So others are in worse shape than we are at this point in time. And if indeed you could hold that and put it in the second round of discussion, it makes sense. Where other needs have really kind of manifested themselves, and one need that I got many calls on is food and feeding. Particularly for the summer months, for the school children who had been fed through the school year, but because of the fact that the school year is ending, won't be able to receive food as they move through the summer, and that's a real concern. So something we put $5 million aside for the food bank, but that really doesn't address the meals program that's currently in place. And taking care of the school age kids, so there's an item that I think we have to look at in terms of maybe expansion. And I think a waiver has to be applied for in order to maintain that feeding, that because it shuts down. I think when the school year shuts down, just and there's a dramatic need there, as I see it, and as I have heard from people. So how that fits into the picture is something that I think is worthy of discussion.
I'm looking at the board, and I see that we have a question from Representative Dick Hinch.
Yes, thank you, Jerry. So I think I would be comfortable if we could come to an agreement today, because I thought we were at an agreement on Wednesday that we liked the allocation scenario of, you know, like 45% now and then further spending, which, by the way, I agree should go out right away And then by May 31st, we're looking at this again for another disbursement of approximately 15%, and then again June, et cetera, et cetera. What I'm a little concerned about, more than a little concerned about, is that I have received some recommended spending that really takes that 45%, and if we add up everything that was requested, then that number is much, much higher. It could be 70 or 75% right away. And I think we lost track of get some emergency funding out right away for those items that are critical. And that doesn't mean that any one of these would not be coming back for a second or even a third disbursement. But before we start adding in too much and getting away from the 45% theory, before we know it, we're going to spend the whole $1.25 million this afternoon. I don't mean any disrespect to anybody, but when I saw the request, that's kind of what it is. So are we all in agreement that we should stick with the 45% number on an immediacy, and then come back, because I think that's going to dictate how we fill in the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Senator Susie?
Well, I understand Representative Hinch's comment or his discussion. It's that we should come up with the number that we want in reserve before we decide on the spending. I think it might be a better exercise to just go through the recommendations of the spreadsheet, and then at the end we'll determine if that last number is a reasonable number. Because I think we are prioritizing the spend. I think the $50 million, the timing of that, obviously, for unemployment. If we add some to nonprofits, it would probably go out at a different time. If we leave it sort of to the side and say $50 million later for the fund, means that we might not be expending that money until June, perhaps. I don't know what Senator Morris intended, but, you know, based on Senator D'Alessandro's discussion with Commissioner Capatis, the dollars aren't needed immediately. So I think if we go through the rest of the items individually, I think we may get to that number differently than we might have originally anticipated from the spreadsheet, because the original spreadsheet had all 50 of the unemployment, I think, going out sooner. So I just think we need to go through each item before we make that determination about how the balance is going to be allocated. That's all.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Thank you, Jerry. I agree with what Donna said, but I think one thing that we have to take into consideration is what that number really is, because there are times the governor has allocated monies and spent monies out of the 1.25 that leaves the corpus at another number. For example, what happened on Monday, there was a big spend which reduced the amount of money that was available to us to spend. So if you're going to create a reserve, I think you got to go through all of the items first, allocate all of the money that has been spent, and then begin to build your reserve in your percentage, because the corpus, the main corpus, has changed to some extent because of appropriations that have already been expended. Thank you.
Senator Morris. Senator Morris, I believe your hand is up.
You know, I keep hitting that mute button. I believe we've accounted for all the spending with $255 million
from the governor's office today, unless something happened more recent. But I wouldn't suggest on unemployment that we carry the $50 million to the bottom of the document. I would just bring the topic to the bottom because I agree with what's being said. We'll have a debate, you know, and I don't know the time period, and nor do I know if 15% is the right number. But, you know, if we come up with something today or Monday that we can believe in the first round, there's nothing saying we don't spend it all in the second round because, I mean, some of you will know before me, what if the federal government is working on another document? I mean, at that point, maybe it makes sense to move the rest of the money, you know, because you're dealing with a much bigger number. So I don't know that we have to, you know, go there. I think if we go through each item, which is what the Senate President suggested, we can, you know, if we buy into the fact that unemployment comes out of this document, goes down to future discussion, that's a starting point. Now we get to state government. All of those numbers are already being, you know, they're already out there. I'm not sure we have to debate any of those three numbers because the 65, the 25, and the 75 are already accounted for. And we didn't propose adding to either any of those. So then you go down to local and county government. Just correct me, I'm reading two documents that basically have additional spending. So if they fall into these categories, we should have those debates while we're in these categories. I mean, I don't think they do, but I tried to take the numbers from all these proposals and put them into a place where it looked like it came to on our document, but I could be wrong. But I don't want to go too fast, but I think the real debate's coming up in sections after this, to be honest with you.
This is Jerry Little. I would just like to point out that at your meeting on Wednesday, you asked us to arranged to have Deputy Commissioner Labors join us today, and he is on the phone. Would you like him to continue? He was late. He was next in the agenda. Would you like him to wait until that point, or since you've been discussing unemployment insurance and possibly moving this to a future consideration, would you like him to jump in now?
Commissioner Little, this is Donna Soucy. I would be happy to speak with him if he's on the phone. I know he's got a lot of demands on his time. I'm happy to hear from him for a few moments. If we could, we can answer questions.
Exactly what I was thinking. He's a busy guy. Rich, are you with us this afternoon now?
I am, Commissioner. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
I've enjoyed listening in without actually having to participate. That was a fun break in my day, actually.
I'm sorry, I ratted you out, didn't I? I'm sorry. Do you have reactions, or do members of the committee have specific questions for Mr. Labors?
I had some quick numbers I could go over for folks. I won't take too much of your time, and I'd leave the time to the questions from the members so that can make the best use of the meeting. These are some updated numbers since we had last spoke. As every day that goes by, we learn a little bit more about what we might be looking to expect and how to prepare for it. So as I had previously said, we started with the spike in unemployment caused by the pandemic. We started with a solvent trust fund at $300 million. As Commissioner Capatis had pointed out to Senator D'Alessandro, many states, I believe we have, it might be as many as seven states have already gotten approval to start borrowing from U.S. Treasury, includes California, New York. These were states that had not actually gained solvency following the Great Recession. So we started at $300 million determined solvent by U.S. Department of Labor when they reviewed our trust fund back in February of this year. We are at right now, our balance as of May 6th is $254 million. How the payment activity has looked thus far and a breakdown of which programs and who's responsible for it. We have paid out through this morning $329.6 million in benefits. That's in a month and a half. My total benefits paid last year were $43.6 million. $110 million of that $329 has been paid out in state UI and federal pandemic benefits. So those are the two programs that are paying individuals for their first 26 weeks of eligibility. So those are all the newly eligible people that have suffered a job loss as a result of COVID-19 starting back on March 17th. The balance of the total amount paid thus far, the $219.6 million, has been paid out in those federal $600 payments. Those come out of a completely separate fund from the New Hampshire Trust Fund. USDOL regularly replenishes that, and we draw down from that separate fund for those $600 payments that continue through July. The $110 million that has been paid out for the people that have become initially eligible, and this is for their first 26 weeks, that is a breakdown between state-funded UI and federally funded pandemic benefits at a 55-45 split right now. So 55% of that, or $60.5 million, is being shouldered by the state trust fund, and 45% of that, or $49.5 million, is federally reimbursable pandemic unemployment paid under the CARES Act. Our current weekly disbursement rate of what is being paid out each week is right at $30 million. And so if we carry that forward and look at that split, that is about a 16.5 million weekly obligation on the state UI fund, and that balance of 13.5 is federally reimbursable PUA, the pandemic money. So if we make an assumption, which I don't think it is an assumption that I'd be comfortable making at this point, that $30 million is going to be our weekly burn rate for disbursements going forward, I think there's a strong likelihood it could be higher than that. But if you assume that burn rate of $30 million for what we're seeing right now, you'd be looking at 15 weeks without assuming any additional revenue coming into the trust fund for that period of time. Revenue is difficult to be projecting right now because of timing. As folks know, our majority of the trust fund revenue comes in as a result of the wages paid by employers during the first calendar quarter of the year. So those wages paid in January, February, and March, employers then have until the end of April, usually a lot of it comes in the first week of May where we are, to pay the taxes that are based upon wages paid by those employers during the first quarter. What we are seeing right now, and I can't say this is being final because revenue continues to come in and we are still here only at May 8th, but the initial numbers are troubling, more troubling than I would have expected for the first quarter, knowing that employment really dropped off a cliff in March, but the revenues coming in for the first quarter compared to 2019 revenues for the same period, just going over both, going from just looking at the May 1st to May 7th of 2019 to 2020, we are looking right now at a 47% drop in revenue in 2019 during that period, where it's the lion's share of the first quarter payments coming in, was $10.7 million. And we've seen $5.6 million during those same days. So almost cut in half. And the pandemic didn't hit really in that first quarter until what we had thought was in March, which is when we saw the unemployment spiking once the governor had announced expanded eligibility on the 17th. So in looking at that burn rate of 15 weeks, that gets New Hampshire to about mid-August when the fund would continue to have revenue to pay benefits. That burn rate also doesn't assume any revenue for the two surcharges that are both 0.5% that would need to be put on at some, that would both be put on at this point in the third quarter of this year. With looking at trying to project out, where I said I was not at a point where I would say that $30 million was our new disbursement weekly rate, because I don't think that's necessarily the ceiling yet. And I think your high rate of collecting in terms of right now we have about 115,000 active weekly filers. And you're going to continue to see that for a whole host of reasons through the end of July because of the availability of enhanced benefits and also the continuation of the stay-at-home order for the state, as the governor has been very clear that despite his gradual reopening, that the stay-at-home order still is very much in place. So it's difficult to project out. We do have the benefit of having Brian Gottlob, longtime state economist, now working here at the department for. He came in a few months before the pandemic, and I think from an economist's perspective, this is probably that perfect storm of what you've been waiting for your entire career to try to look at and figure out where things are going. I think over the next 2 weeks and what we see for weekly payouts, I think we'll have a really good idea as to whether or not that $30 million a week is what's stabilized and then is what we will see through July. Or does that grow to $35 or $40 million, which when you compound that over that many number of weeks, obviously has a dramatic impact on our burn rate. Trying to figure out what we could draw from prior experiences, I with what I've been seeing in terms of the spike and how aggressive it has hit, I don't think there's anything we can draw from lessons from the Great Recession or any prior recessionary period, to be quite honest with you. We started this. This is one of 31 states that was considered solvent, but you got to look at what were they considering us solvent for? And they were looking at our total wages paid for the prior year, and then they were taking our three worst or highest benefit payment years over the last 20 and averaging that and saying that that's what we were solvent for, and they were giving us a stamp of solvency. Well, that's not what we're experiencing right now. The fact is, in the last 4 years, we had, and this is from 2016 through 2019, we had 130,000 initial claims. We've had over 150,000 in just a month and a half. So there's nothing that I can look to for prior experiences that is really going to be useful in trying to predict, other than looking at what is on the ground in terms of what are the levers that are going to control continued filing, and what benefits are in place, and what are the needs on the ground as well with public health concerns as we continue to be where we currently are. So at that rate, I don't know if, you know, the numbers that have been discussed for amount from the CARES Act flex funds, I don't know if $50 million amount would be very well spent on in supporting the state trust fund. You look at, we have, as other states are already doing, there's, you know, the federal government provides limited purpose interest-free borrowing for states for their unemployment compensation trust funds, and that right now we know is interest-free for the remainder of calendar year 2020. We don't know exactly what that will look like for 2021. That will have to be addressed by Congress in one of the next pieces of legislation. But it is right now for the rest of the year, it is interest-free, limited-purpose borrowing that we can take advantage of, that can be our backstop to make sure that we continue to be able to meet the demands for payment of benefits, whereas the flex funds that you folks are discussing about, you know, would, where those are more general purposed, and we have a limited purpose pool of interest-free money available for the trust fund. I just put it out. I obviously don't. I'm not going to. I can not going to tell you what to do from a policy perspective. But I think just in looking at that, with the amount of money that we will likely need to borrow, that the limited purpose funds from the U.S. Treasury for state trust funds at interest free right now through the rest of the year, I think would probably be the best option for New Hampshire, as that is what other states are all doing right now as well. So I can I'll just stop right there. I probably took more time than I should have, but I'll open it up for questions, and you guys have me for as long as you need me.
Thank you, Mr. Labors. We have a question from Senator Morse. Senator Morse.
Yeah. First, let me thank Rich for everything he's doing for the state. Two questions. Is it, first, are we hearing anything besides taking a no-interest loan from the federal government that might be coming down the pike?
Senator, I think there's one other consideration out there. You know, they get the no interest loans, but then there's also a provision that was tucked away in the CARES Act that would allow states to obtain. It's dealing with nonprofits, okay? So either public or private nonprofits. So both your local and county public employers, and then your nonprofit employers. But there's a provision in the CARES Act that allows states to get 50% of benefits paid out for state UI, of benefits paid out to former employees of nonprofits, the states can get 50% of that from the federal government, and can then provide a reimbursement to those nonprofits. So the problem that we're having with that provision in the CARES Act, and I think a lot of states are having, is in order for states to take advantage of that, it requires the nonprofits to first pay, so they would have to reimburse the fund dollar for dollar for the benefits that are paid out. Right now, under the governor's emergency order, those employers, as are all employers, they are not being charged those benefits. With nonprofits, because they don't regularly contribute to the trust fund in its growth, right now all that they're contributing to is the decline of the trust fund, where they, because of statutory provisions where they reimburse only for those benefits that are paid out, they don't pay in on a quarterly basis. So they are utilizing the fund for which they didn't contribute to. A lot of good reasons for doing that, considering the importance of the healthcare sector and our hospitals and the financial difficulties that they're having with just the revenue problems without being able to really have anyone that wants to engage in elective procedures. So the difficulty with that provision from the CARES Act is great that we can go and get 50% of those benefits paid out and that we can bring that back in. The problem is we would have to be charging the nonprofits at least 50% of the benefit payments, and they would have to actually pay that. They would have to, you know, they would have to hand over cash to the trust fund in order for us to get that 50% that could then be go and reimburse those nonprofits. So it's another opportunity to get money from the feds, but I don't know whether or not it's worth the procedure that they've put in place where you actually have to make those employers who are in difficult circumstances, you have to make them pay before you can actually, you know, you're taking it from the left hand and then eventually giving it back to them with the right hand. I don't know if that makes much sense. There is discussion. I know a lot of states have been pushing Congress to act on that and to change the process so that the nonprofits wouldn't actually have to pay, which in that case, then we would be able to get at least a limited relief to the trust fund, but it would be only for the benefits that are paid under regular state UI, and it wouldn't be any of the benefits that are paid under any of the federal programs. So it's a limited amount of money that we'd be able to get back. You're probably looking at, right now, that'd be less than $10 million.
Okay. And then my second question, I understand the concept of taking a loan for 0%, but I believe I've had this conversation. When do we start paying back that loan? And two, don't the same entities that are paying back that loan have to rebuild the trust fund to a certain level?
Yeah, Senator, absolutely. And I know you've had a lot of experience with looking at this in the last recession and the 2010 reforms that were put in place. And that's exactly correct. So the trust fund and the amount that we would borrow would need to be repaid, and we'd have to obviously be we would want to repay that ahead of accruing any borrowing costs, which right now we don't know. We know that January 1st of 21, that it is scheduled, those are no longer scheduled to be interest-free. However, that could be changed. I would expect it to be changed, but I don't know that for sure. But employers, through their tax rates for unemployment comp, would be the ones that would be paying that back. So it would be money coming in to replenish the fund, but also paying back the federal government at a rate that we would hopefully avoid borrowing costs. We were fortunate back in when we borrowed in 2010 and 11, we borrowed a total of $120 million in about $260 million chunks, and we were able to pay all of that back without incurring any borrowing costs, but that was because of the reforms put in place in 2010. Where the surcharge was added, so there were 2 half-point surcharges. The taxable wage base went up from 8,000 to 14,000 gradually. It went 8,000 to 10,000 next year to 12,000 to 14, where it still stands. The waiting week was put into place. So there were a lot of measures that were put into place to control disbursements, but to also increase revenue. That was largely balanced on the backs of New Hampshire business. And their rates went up significantly as a result of that. Just in looking at, in a lot of cases, I had gone back and dusted off the trust fund solvency report that we had done for a subcommittee of our advisory council back in 2016, 2017, and just to give you an example, prior to just looking at recessionary experience with those reforms put in place for an employer that had 50 employees, in 2007 they were paying about $5,000 a year in unemployment comp taxes, and then in 2011, or rather 2012, they were paying over $24,000. a year in unemployment comp taxes. So in many cases, they nearly quintupled what they were paying in order to replenish the fund. So that obviously is a considerable ask of New Hampshire businesses for continued support of the trust fund.
Thank you.
Senator Susi, do you have a question?
Yes, I did, Commissioner. Assistant Commissioner, first of all, thank you, the Commissioner, and most of all of your folks on the front lines of this. I know that the department is about as stressed as it can possibly be, but continues to do great work during all of this. My question is regarding assistance that your office might continue to need. One of the conversations we had previously was regarding software upgrades and whether or not there are additional funds required that may assist you and your employees to continue to do this good work, or if it's simply just additional employees that you need at this time. What is it that we might be able to do in the short term to help you deal with this overwhelming capacity issue?
Thank you for the comment, Senator, and the question. So really, I think probably what New Hampshire could use is similar to other UI agencies. I need more experts right now, right? But because of the nature of the spike where I went from 500 claims in 1 week to 30,000 in the next, and we were at a historic low in terms of our federal grant dollars, I was actually, ironically, I looked at one of our reports when I was cleaning up a pile of stuff just this week, and the federal government actually considered me 16 positions overstaffed in the month prior to the pandemic. So we were actually kind of living beyond our means, right, according to what our staffing numbers were as allotted by our federal grants. So right now, really, we've been fortunate with the assistance from the men and women from the New Hampshire National Guard and what they're doing for us in the call centers. You know, those call centers have received over 230,000 calls since March 17th. And the men and women from the Guard have, in a short time period, have turned into experts on UI. So right now, I think from a software hardware perspective, software, we're in a great position. New Hampshire is one of 16 states nationally that has what the U.S. Department of Labor would consider a modernized unemployment benefit system. So other states where you've heard or seen people filing paper claims, waiting in lines outside of offices, that's because those states are still operating on like 1970s or 80s COBOL systems. New Hampshire upgraded back in 2009, and we've enhanced through the use of federal dollars every opportunity we've had since then. So that's why individuals have the conveniences that they have in terms of how they file and why our system has been able to handle the volume that we have seen thus far. So we've done really well. And there's a quick 4-minute video that I had sent out to Lisa English to pass on to the members that the Wall Street Journal did, just looking at what the problems have been for state UI agencies in general, and they focused on technology and staffing. And I'm not sure what the current status is, but at the time that they did that video 2 weeks ago, the state of Arizona was still 18 weeks away from being able to pay federal pandemic benefits. New Hampshire started paying those on March 24th, and that was because of the strength of the system that we have built over the years. What we do need, and what we had an informational item that was on the council agenda this week and again on joint fiscal today, New Hampshire received $4.4 million as a result of the $1 billion that the Congress authorized under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, and that $4.4 million was for states to assist with staffing and IT needs as they started to face the spike in claims. $315,000 of that $4.4 million is what we're using for hardware upgrades. So we had fairly new system hardware for our benefit system, but it was sized for what we thought was a spike in claims before this pandemic, and now it's now we're realizing that just this volume is, you know, far and away exceeds anything that anyone had ever sized their system for in terms of speed, performance, capacity. And so we're actually using that $315,000 to purchase four new solid-state SANs to replace our older servers that still, you know, they have spinnable disks. So more moving parts, and the way I understand it as a non-IT guy, is more movable parts, more things that could break easier, and less sleep for me at night. And so we're actually going to be implementing those new SANs for that are actually sized for more than what we're experiencing now. So we have greater capacity, memory, CPU, greater speed, not only at our main server room here in Concord, but at our redundancy center in Nashua. So we're actually going to have new hardware that's going to increase performance and reliability and eliminate downtime for our system when we have to push through enhancements or data fixes. So we're going to actually be able to keep it standing up. So no more of those annoying messages that Wednesday night you're going to have 2 hours of downtime. Sorry for the inconvenience. We're also actually installing new switches between Concord and Nashua to increase the speed at which data is transferred. And we're actually installing a new switch going from a gig to 10 gig between Concord and Nashua, and then between our Concord office and DOIT's main hub on Hazen. We're also increasing the fiber lines between each of those locations as well. So again, we're trying to learn from the experience that we've had in this first month and a half. I don't know what we're going to see for a lull this summer, and I don't know whether we're going to see a spike in the fall, but you can be sure that we're going to be prepared for it, and that's what we're using the money that we received from the federal government for. The rest of that $4.4 million has been budgeted towards personnel costs. Our, as you can imagine, our overtime costs changed significantly from what we had been budgeted for, where we implemented our mandatory overtime staffing plan back at the end of March, and we have been working 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 9 to 5 on Saturdays and Sundays, and so that's a lot of additional staff charges. We are giving people some breaks so that you're not working two evenings in a row, and you're not working both weekend days. So we're giving people breaks in order to encourage some balancing and mental health. But it's really the experts that we have on the ground that we have to rely upon as we get through this first surge. Come this summer, if we see a lull, then that will be a good opportunity to bring on some additional staffing and give us time to train without taking away our best resources away from processing claims. So that's kind of where we are and where our thought process is right now on the technology side.
Great, that is helpful. And just one last question, if I may, Assistant Commissioner. One of the issues that seems to be a challenge for folks, and I just wondered if you had any tips that you could share and we can continue to pass on, self-employed individuals applying seem to have greater difficulty than any other category I've heard from. Is there anything in particular that has improved in that process or that individual claimants need to improve to manage through it more quickly?
Yeah, so that's a good question. You know, historically, the unemployment system and the self-employed, they don't get along very well. You know, they're self-employed were not part of the system. And so that presents some challenges, right, in trying to figure out how do you uphold the integrity of the fund and pay at a verified correct rate for a weekly benefit amount with someone whose wages and earnings have not been reported into the system. So that was the challenge. But we knew, you know, New Hampshire is a small business state, a lot of self-employed, and we knew that in order to really effectively broaden eligibility to encourage effective quarantining, you had to address self-employed. And so that's why it was addressed in the governor's emergency order. What we have currently in place, and I think is a good process, and there, you know, there's always, as you're trying to stand up new functionality, there are always going to be some bumps along the way. But I think the process we have in place works well, where an individual that has self-employed earnings and is able to certify to meeting one of the criteria under the CARES Act under their weekly claim, now when they're coming in, they're automatically put in at the federal minimum rate of $167 a week. That gives you eligibility for the $600 payment as well. And then to the extent the individual has earnings higher than that which would equate to a $167 a week rate, they then have the opportunity to submit to the department either their federal return for 2019, just the Schedule C, or 1099s from 2019. And to the extent they are able to document earnings above $16,500, that would actually provide them with a higher weekly benefit amount. We would then take that in. We would then have verified earnings to get them above the minimum rate under the Federal CARES Act, and then we would correct back to their first week of eligibility. So there have been, in some instances, a lot of the problems within self-employed is not necessarily self-employed. It's a lot of people have mixed earnings, right? You have traditional employment and you have self-employment as well. And you'll have individuals with self-employment earnings. They've heard, oh, yeah, I'm now eligible for unemployment. I'm going to file because my self-employment has impacted and it's gone and dried up. So I want those benefits. But a lot of those people are maintaining their regular W-2 employment because it was part-time. And so what the Federal CARES Act requires states to do is that before I can look at your federal eligibility, I got to make sure that you don't have state eligibility. That was a point of contention from the very beginning and that we argued against being included in the CARES Act, but it's there. We'll live with it. But we have to look to see if you have state eligibility. And that person that no longer has their self-employment earnings but has W-2 wages, they have state eligibility. It doesn't matter from which they've been separated or lost employment. They have earnings if they're over $2,800 in that four-quarter base period. They have enough earnings to earn them to have a state rate. And so they're paid at their state rate. Federal government has said we can't consider their self-employment earnings in that situation. And so that has created a lot of frustration amongst self-employed individuals, and we've been trying to explain it. It's not the easiest thing to explain. Doesn't message very well on a website, but we've been trying to do that as we work with each of those individuals. And our messaging has gotten better. Assistant Commissioner Bailey over at Department of Safety made the comment to me. I didn't have a wartime a website, and he and I have been working very closely together. And I said, Rick, that is true, but I also it's difficult to change a website during a war. And we managed to do that this week. We stood up a new website on Tuesday of this week. It's unemploymentbenefits.nh.gov. We've got video tutorials. We've got side-by-side narrative with screenshot tutorials. I got a chat feature that we're launching tomorrow morning. We have great FAQs. Really able to provide some timely information to folks around the CARES Act, what it means, what do those eligibility questions really mean, and we're able to message some of the information we've gotten from the U.S. Department of Labor around, you know, am I still eligible under the CARES Act if there's a stay-at-home order in place? And, you know, that answer is yes, and we're able to get that information out to people prior to them going in and panicking when they're trying to fill out their form and not knowing what to do. So we're able to get that out earlier, and it's just a constant battle. Let's keep our messaging relevant. Let's keep it timely, and let's stay ahead of what the questions that we're – let's try to anticipate those questions coming in. And that website right now has just been I don't know what I'd be doing without it. It's just provided a great feature for getting information out to, you know, the 115,000 people that are now everyone has questions that need to be answered, and that's the best way to get it out to them.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Assistant Commissioner Labors? Seeing and hearing none, Rich, thank you very, very much.
Hey, thank you, everyone, for your time and the work that you're doing.
You're welcome. So that brings us back to our agenda. I think, Senator Morse, we were discussing the idea of moving the on unemployment from the first line down to what I believe you were saying, the end of the proposal, which I think meant moving it under future considerations. Is that correct, sir?
Yes. But I also like to point something out. There's no free lunch in any of these categories, because the number that we didn't discuss was, you know, that going for, on a 50-employee company, your tax is going up $20,000 a year. So we may not be getting charged as companies today, but in order to refill that bucket and to pay back the money that's going to end up being borrowed, whether it's at zero interest rate, which is great, but it's still going to have to be paid back, your rates are going up considerably. So I just say that today for a future debate, but I would just move this down to future discussion.
Any thoughts or comments from the committee?
All right, do we want to move on to I don't think there was anything under state government on anyone's documents that was presented. I'll just wait a second. All right. So the next thing is local and county government. I got to get my document. I didn't see anything under this also that anyone was proposing any changes.
That's a figure, I believe, that's already been funded, Senator Morse.
Yeah, I just, with the letters that I received today, there are some proposals, you know, to make changes to the different categories. So I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. There we go. All right. Under business relief funding plan, there's a proposal to reduce this from.
Senator Morse, before we move on, there is an item on the email from Representative Wallner relative to local and county government. Representative Wallner, do you want to speak about that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Little. I actually was wanting us to possibly take a look again at the frontline workers and being sure that we have enough funds available so that in long-term care facilities particularly, that all of the staff, including the support staff, like the people who are cleaning, the food service people, all of those are also receiving that $300 a week bonus. Plus, my understanding is that some of our protective workers are going to start again doing face-to-face visits, and I think they would be, we should consider providing some reimbursement, some bonus for them also as they start those going out to families and going face-to-face in their working. So the child protection workers and just being sure that in those long-term care facilities where the situation is so drastic that we are sure that we've got enough funds in there that everyone in those facilities is getting the additional $300.
Any other thoughts or comments about that?
Well, I just think that's why we need to keep coming back to this document. The you know, there's $40 million in local and county government. I mean, nursing homes, I would assume that the $20 million in the future proposal is something different than this $300. But I just don't know enough about what the impact of $300 means. I mean, I at all. So,
Representative Wallner?
Yes, thank you. And I don't know the dollar for dollar impact either. So I would like to see us at least put this at the, for us to do an evaluation of what is happening. I know that we've already, I believe we've got $25 million in there that for frontline workers that has already gone out. So it would be important to me to know in the next week or so how that's being drawn down and what the balance there is.
Very good. That's
I think we're there's a couple of different things going on. The $25 million is and the $75 million are in a different category. I just don't know enough about it, to be honest with you, to talk about it.
So I believe this is Jerry. I believe that fund for the frontline workers hazard pay is at Employment Security. No? That's the long-term care. The nursing home is what we're talking about, right? Were you talking about police and fire?
I was talking about particularly about nursing homes, long-term care.
Yep, the long-term care is at Employment Security. That's where that fund is and where it's being managed out of. So you're requesting an update on how much of that fund has been spent so far, what the balance is remaining in that fund.
Just so that we keep track and in our next round, if that fund is getting low, that we consider adding additional funds to that hazard pay.
We will look into that. We're checking to see whether or not we have that on our website right now, but I'm not sure. There's not a lot of information there, but we'll get you an updated number, Representative.
Thank you.
May I ask Representative Wallner a question?
Certainly. I'm sorry, Senator Susi, I did not see your hand up there on the screen. My apologies.
Nope.
Go ahead.
So in that fund, the current $75 million that's being administered through Employment Security, it says eligible workers. am I correct, Representative Wallner, you want to see that definition expanded a bit to additional workers within the long-term care system?
Well, I would like to see that expanded to include people who are working in food service and in long-term care, working cleaning the buildings, those kinds of workers. So
great.
Expanding
and
a little bit of expansion, but also under the state, I would like to see the protective care workers included as they start those family visits again.
Great, thank you.
Senator Morris, a question, a comment?
Yeah, I think, instead of dropping anything that's in this document down to future discussions, in my opinion, are things that are not in this document. Anything that's in this document, I would think we'd want to review every month anyway. I mean, or whatever period of time this group chooses. Because, I mean, anything we do now, we're gonna want to go back and make sure it's working. I mean, I would just think that's going to be an assumption that we can all make, is if we fund a category now, you know, next month when we come back, we start to review each category and find out where they are.
So Lisa English from our office has been busy on the keyboard and has some data for you, Representative Wallner.
Great, thank you.
Representative Wallner, this is Lisa English. For the spend on the long-term care stabilization stipend, the total spend through yesterday is $3,054,600. The total committed through yesterday is $5,536,950. And I pulled up the guidance on New Hampshire Employment Security about what is a qualifying frontline employee. And frontline means work provided by employees that work in direct care, food service, maintenance, et cetera, for a Medicaid-enrolled provider. So it's for employees that are not able to do their work remotely, and their service is vital to patient care.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that. Can you tell me how long has the payment been being made? So the $3 million with $5 million being committed to it, how many, what period of time does that cover?
So the program rolled out, I believe, on April 16th. Now, I suspect that it took some time for individuals, for the employers to apply and then get approved and have the funding go out. So I don't have those details, but it's been about 3 weeks since the program was first rolled out.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And I did want to know, under the what about the child protective workers? Are they included in any of these, in these categories?
They are not. There may be categories for residential treatment, but I would have to take a look at the guidance for that.
Okay, thank you. That I would appreciate to find out more about that.
I do have it. It just took me a second. Residential SUD, mental health providers, youth residential treatment providers are included as qualifying Medicaid providers according to the May 4th COVID-19 long-term care stabilization program guidance.
But not the child protection workers that work for the state?
I do not believe that they're included, other than frontline workers at Sununu, at Sununu Youth Services Center.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't see any other hands raised on the screen, so I guess we're going back to you, Senator Morse. I think we were at, I just finished local and county government, and you were moving forward to business relief funding.
On the business relief funding, on one of the documents I received, it was suggested that we reduce this to $75 million.
Yes, I think that was Representative Wallner's request that was just discussed. Her suggestion was to move $25 million from business relief and move it to the $300 stipend program we were just discussing.
Right. And this is Representative Wallner. That's exactly what I was trying to – I was trying to stay within our limits of not spending the total amount of money available to us. So, I think the $100 million, I would like to see us be able to go back and revisit that one at a later date.
Yeah, and the only thing I did in this category in trying to get some logic to numbers, what was presented to us was $700 million. When we listened to the debate, and with the hospitals, it was $500 million. So I basically tried to pick a percentage that worked for each situation and start to get something going. That's how I came up with these numbers, and it just so happens that Senator Del Santo put the same numbers down. So that's why I put them in here.
Questions or comments? I don't see any. We'll note that we're a little bit after 3 o'clock. Representative Hennessy, you have a question.
Thank you, Director Little. I just wanted to make a comment on the intended use for these funds and also reference something that one of the other advisory board members said earlier in our conversation. One is that I hope when these are allocated to the RDCs that it would be in a fair manner where not all funds go to one part of the state. As you know, I'm from the North Country, and I'd like to see some of those funds go up here. Also, I don't know that $100 million could be easily divided into those 10 RDCs and gotten out. I'm not the expert on that. So I did like the idea, and I apologize, I forget who mentioned it from the other advisory group, that maybe local banks would be involved in this process as well, similar to the SBA loan process that's going on for the federal program.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments at the moment? Noticing it's a bit after 3 o'clock, do you have guidance for us as to how you would like us to proceed through the rest of the agenda this afternoon? We've got a couple of emailed communications relative to changes people would like to see. Speaker Shurtleff asked for some changes. Representative Wallner had another one that she would like to toss out there. Senator Morse, do you want to ask if there are any other changes in any of the categories on the document that you and Senator D'Alessandro put together that people would like to discuss?
Well, yeah, I would, but I think this is going into Monday anyways. But maybe the best way to end this, because it is Mother's Day weekend, and I definitely have been on the phone for like 4 hours so far today. When we do come back, and I suggest we come back today, if I total all these documents, it came to $1 billion if we add everything in. And I just don't think if we want to send a message, and remember, we're not the ones that are going to make this decision,
If we want to send a message that this needs to go out today, I think that message needs to be closer to where this document is right now, and then start working on all these other categories. We're definitely diving into things today that I have no knowledge of, none. And I would think, like anyone else on this group, you'd want to bring somebody in and discuss it. You know, much like we brought Rich in today, I think it's pretty obvious what that's going to cost in the long run. So, if anything, the $50 million is not enough. But that's a future debate, and I'm willing to put it out for a future debate. I thought the document was pretty strong right now, except for nonprofits, because of what I heard from Jerry the other day. I don't know if anyone's had time to look into that, but the you know, the fact that they wanted 125, that's a big number, and I didn't see a way to get there and make this document realistic today. But I mean, I think we have to figure that one out. So
what Senator Morse just referred to is that we have received a proposal to address nonprofit issues in the state of New Hampshire from the Charitable Foundation, the CDFA, and the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits. We've been chatting with them with an all-in allotment for covering very, very broadly from child care and health care at the regional centers to arts, which is an economic driver. So very broad coverage of the nonprofit, the thousands of nonprofits in the state of New Hampshire at about $125 million. So that is in our hand at this point in time. We also have a proposal from the BFA for doing small business relief, and we heard from the folks on the Stakeholder Advisory Board and from many of you multiple times that they recommend we use the experienced agencies and experts in the state of New Hampshire to deliver services to those broader general swaths sectors of society and the economy. So we have those to look at, too. We're also getting a lot of questions on the screen right now, and I sort of lost track of which came in what order, but I think it's Representative Kinch is next.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. So I agree with Senator Morse. I think that we all received some recommended changes. The document came, an hour or so before the meeting started, and I think we need to have time to look at those. I did the same math exercise that Senator Morse did and came out as well to almost $1 billion, which kind of reinforced my comment of earlier. So I think we really need to spend some quality time over the weekend and look at these and try to put some priority to it so that we go back to the theory that we had before of doing this in segmented spending proposals, because if we were to say yes to all of these today, which I don't hear us doing, but if we were, then, you know, we just about spent the whole allocation that's come to us. So I think we need to pause, step back, and look at these and analyze what the effect is going to be. By the way, I remind everybody that the governor is on now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hinch. Senator Stusty?
Thank you, Senator. Just a couple things in response. I mean, there are about $250 million that has already been determined by the governor. So I think the requests are less than $1 billion, but that's for formatting, I think, on the sheet. I do think we would be remiss if we didn't pick a few key areas, and I think there are two or three key areas that we need to make recommendations on immediately. There is some urgency. Many of you may have heard there was yet another round of federal funding for the hospitals. However, the money was characterized as money going to rural hospitals. So what that means is that the two major hospitals in our two largest cities that are handling the largest number of COVID patients didn't receive any of those funds. I think the area of hospitals is one where I think we're all pretty much in agreement. I have a minor suggestion and a suggestion for distribution. I'd like to try and act on a few key things today and then come back on Monday to finalize the order of spending, but I would hope that we wouldn't just end today without making some decisions.
Well, I've made my proposal for what I felt we should vote on today, and that's basically move the $50 million into the nonprofits, and then I think there's one thing that I would propose, and that's the $75 million, which alludes to what you're talking about, on the hospital line be a direct allocation based on their losses, because they've closed the month of April already. They actually told me in one of my meetings within the last month that by May 15th, they actually have, I don't know that you'd call it audited documents, but they have documents for the month before. So I would think that that allocation can go out right away. And that's why I thought the document was a good document to get a vote on. I actually thought the letter tied well to saying that we think it needs to go out right away. And the only question I had was tying the letter on that one paragraph. These weren't my numbers originally. I changed one group of numbers, the university. I'm not willing to change that yet, but I think we could come back and talk about that. The university, I think, called at least my office and said they want the money applied in a different manner. I haven't even looked into that. It's just the call, I believe, was this morning. That's why this is evolving every day. And I just thought we were pretty strong. The letter and everything, it would be a good package to vote out today. But if you're not comfortable doing that, I don't want to split the package and just vote out hospitals today, because I'm not willing to do that.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Thank you very much. I think there are items of urgency, and we have been talking about priorities. It seems to me the hospitals are a significant priority. We ought to think about that. We get new information every day about what's happening with more money going that isn't included in this amount of money to hospitals. So obviously that's a very urgent situation. And I put the number of $100 million in. I think that's the reasonable number for the hospitals. And remember that within the area that I represent, we have really three major functioning entities, the Catholic Medical Center, Elliott, and we have Hitchcock. And then you get the stuff in Nashville. Their burn rate's pretty significant, and their inability to do elective surgeries has really put a dent in their balance sheet. So I would think that this is a priority item, and we ought to be thinking about that. And we've got to send some recommendations forward. Time is wasting if we don't do that. And everybody's getting different proposals every minute of the day. People are listening in here and sending emails or sending texts and so forth. But it just seems to be we've got to begin the decision making process. We've had a lot of conversation. We've had many people present to us. The rubber has begun to hit the road, and I think we have to move forward. Thank you.
Senator Morris.
Yeah. I don't disagree with the $100 million number, but where I think it should come from, you've been very obvious, and everybody on this committee has been obvious for the last 3 weeks. There's $30 million sitting in another bucket right now, and talking to the hospitals, they've all applied to that same fund.
Right.
So in my opinion, you take the $75 million, you put the suggestion in our letter or some other into this document that $30 million go out now. I think that's a strong way of getting it done. But I don't the money's there. It just hasn't gone out. So I think you could tie it all together with what we're doing and get it done. And I also would like to point out, because we're all getting these things every minute, I just got one from my local nursing home with a great idea to solve the Medicaid problem. And quite honestly, Senator, it's right up the alley of finance. It's raised the rate. One of the states raised it by $20 per resident per day. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're carrying all Medicaid rate residents, that's a way we can go back next week and look at how to solve the nursing home problem. It's a pretty well-written document. I can send it out to all of you from Salem Haven, but we're all getting these every day, and I know there's more decisions to be made, but I'm not so sure we haven't done a good job on something that we could say today this needs to happen. We're going to have serious discussions on every item below where we are right now because everybody's got a different proposal.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions or comments?
Just if I could, Jerry, I think Chuck's comment is quite clear. If you had the 75 and the rest of the money that's left in that $50 million fund, you've come up with the number. You've come up with the $100 million for the hospitals, and that could be something that could be moved out. And as he said, other proposals are coming in all the time. But the question is, how fast are we going to move to address what we know are the significant problems that we see at the moment? I mean, I think that's the key issue.
Speaker Shurtleff, you have a question, sir.
Well, it's a comment, Jerry, and it's a little off subject, but I'd like to see this group vote out and get the $5 million request from the Agriculture Department off to the governor just as soon as we can. For our dairy farmers, they've only got about 2.5 more weeks before they can start planting corn for silage. Plus, our commercial gardeners in the state want to get their gardens planted, but they don't quite know what their future is. So I'd hope that this group would send that request for the $5 million off to the governor so it can get to the Department of Agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Senator Stussy?
I was just going to agree with Senator Morse about the hospital piece. Not that the money is sitting there. I do think, we've had a great deal of trouble trying to figure out what the governor's committee has done with that $50 million set aside. I know that not every hospital applied. Most did, but not everyone did. I do think that if we made that number $100 million, we focused it on their losses for March and April, and any federal revenue, less any federal revenue source they've received up to, and let's pick the date, today's the 8th, let's say the 11th or the 15th, because of that new money that just came out today that was announced for rural hospitals. I think that would be a very easy formula. That would do a lot to get them in better shape. And I think most of the other things, we are going to have to keep coming back and revisiting. But I do think there is an urgency, particularly there, to move that along.
Thank you. Senator Morris?
Yeah, I'm just going to make an offer here. So if we raise the hospitals to 100 and move the $50 million into charity so that we could get a document out and tie it to a letter, is that something we could all agree to? I mean, the $5 million for the agriculture is already in this document.
So if I Representative Hennessey.
Boy, I just want to get a clarification from President Soucy. My concern over your proposal is that some of the hospitals, the rural money that just came in, that I'm sure, I don't know the dollar amounts that were received, but I'm sure it was very helpful to these hospitals now. But if we front load the $100 million and it goes to the non-rural hospitals, are we then going to help the hospitals that have used the federal dollars? And then, I mean, how do you see that working? Do you think that $100 million is what the non-rural hospitals would need?
So I'm just referring to I think all hospitals would be eligible for the $100 million. I'm just saying that latest round of funding, federal funding, was inconsistent. So one way to look at how you would apportion the money, you'd look at everybody's losses for March and April, regardless of the characterization of the individual hospital. But then in addition to that, you would take into account those hospitals that have been able to offset some of their losses with this federal revenue. So to the extent rural hospitals got more or less, they would still have losses, and we would use that $100 million towards helping them. I'm just saying it's one way to try to be a little bit more fair, because it seems to me that here in New Hampshire, we're better able to identify the fact that the largest number of COVID cases as we sit here right now are at Catholic Medical Center. Catholic Medical Center did not receive any of the funds. Concord Hospital, I would argue, is not really rural in my mind, but based on the federal definition, it is. They received significant amount of funds today. So I'm just trying to come up with a way to very quickly, in a data-driven way, balance that out, so that we are trying to help those entities that have the heaviest burden. Because number one, it's not only the fact that they have so many COVID patients and the cost associated, you know, the PPE and everything with those. The more COVID patients you're treating, it means that you are less able to go back to those elective procedures and bill for those and build your revenue back up. So it's almost a double hit. You handle more COVID patients, they cost more. And you can't, on the other hand, deal with the patient
elective procedures.
So I was.
Yep. No, I agree with everything you're saying. My concern is that if we put the $100 million in now, and the accounting for when you're saying look at March and April, but take all the revenues that they've gotten through the middle of May, that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopeful that a lot of the hospitals in New Hampshire have received a lot of free money, or if they've received the PPP loans, if they're under 500 employees, that they're able to turn that into free money. But my concern is that if we come back in a month or two and we don't have any additional funds to allocate to hospitals, that we will have given all of the hospital money away to the people who haven't received it yet. But maybe when we look at the hospitals a month or two from now, the greatest need is not going to be in those locations.
Well,
and we
won't have
money to give out then.
Ideally, Representative Hens, I would think we would do 100 now because the need is so significant, get that out. I do think we will have to revisit it, and I do think when we revisit it, there will be additional federal funds that will have been redistributed. So I want to look at it right now, and that picture, and fulfill those needs, and then revisit a month from now, because I do think the situation is going to change, and I think that will also require reallocation. But I think there's more than enough urgency based on the losses I'm hearing. You know, some hospitals as much as $40 million just for the month of April. So I think 100 is a very good start, but I don't think it's going to address everything.
Representative Hinch.
Yes, thank you, Jerry. So in an effort to move along here, I think I heard a recommendation from Speaker Shurtleff to approve today and ask for an expedited disbursement on the agriculture relief of $5 million. Having heard that, I would make a motion that we approve that and move that process along. It's showing on the document, but to Speaker Shurtleff's point, I think we need to say, okay, we all embrace the $5 million for agriculture relief, and we likewise embrace the need for the sense of urgency to get that out. So let's approve that item on the dock and get it moving.
So we are in a 91A situation, so we'll have to do a roll call vote, but I want to make sure that I fully understand what it is that you are voting on so we can properly write it down here and document the motion. Can somebody state for me what they believe you are voting on?
I can state it because I made the motion. I move that the Legislative Advisory Board authorizes makes a recommendation to the governor that we approve $5 million for the Agriculture Relief Fund, and secondarily that we request that it be expedited to complete that.
I am looking around the room to see if there's an attorney here, and I don't see any. I feel like I'm sitting here acting as a chair of this meeting, and I'm not. So,
well, I raised my hand a couple of times, so
I'm sorry.
Just speak.
Certainly.
Reality is, I think this. I support agriculture as much as anyone. Trust me, I'm in it. We are sending such a shallow message right now based on the fact that I've heard from just about every other group that's on this document how urgent it is that we act. We're just going to vote on agriculture. That's wrong. I'm not there. You can have your vote, but I mean, I'd like to see that letter that goes along with that, because we're going to basically have to explain to everyone that's asking for help this weekend that doesn't think they can make it that we voted on agriculture, period, because that's all we could agree on. I don't see that's where we should be going. And I just, while we were on hospitals, I brought up a document because I thought it was a logical solution. This one was pretty easy based on we could take a percentage of each hospital's operating losses for March and April, which is what we asked them for, and I do have that document, and then offset that amount by what they've received to date in federal grants. It's a fairly simple thing to add to our document to make sure that we're funding the ones that need it. I'm not comfortable breaking this document apart when I'm sure everybody on this document has the same level of needs right about now.
And, Jerry, this is Dick Hinch. Just for clarification, it wasn't my intention to just single out agriculture. It was my intention to go down through this document and reach agreement on those things that we can reach agreement on so that we can make an effort to get the letter out, but also come to some agreements on this first disbursement of funding. I think there's other motions that would need to be following this as well. So I didn't want anybody to misunderstand that agriculture was the only priority on here.
Speaker Shurtleff.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you. First of all, I want to thank my friend from Merrimack for the motion. And I would just say to Senator Morris, I totally agree with what he's saying and what he's thinking. But I think this motion for agriculture is somewhat unique. We have people that have been impacted by so many people in New Hampshire by the pandemic, and they're facing that crisis. But they're also facing another crisis, and that's looking at the calendar. And as someone like yourself who has an agricultural background, you know that there's certain times they've got to start planning if they want to raise silage from dairy cattle for over the next winter. And that clock is running out. So I understand your concern, but I think this is a little bit unique insofar as money needs to get out to those in the dairy industry as well as those commercial, those people operating commercial gardens, so they know that there's a reason for them to start planting. Thank you.
Senator Stussy.
Well, I appreciate Representative Hinch's clarification. If agriculture is but one thing that we're going to talk about, but we're going to go through the rest of the list, then I'm fine with it. But if we're going to just decide that that's all we're doing today, I agree with Senator Morse, that doesn't send a good picture. So I think we just need to decide, are we working our way through the list and dealing with all the items and then sending the letter, or are we deferring to Monday? Because I think it's got to be all, at least a whole package. And there are some other topics that I know other people raised to discuss. Hospitals was one that was very important to me, but I also want to talk about child care. So.
Jerry, this is Dick Hinch again. Just for clarification once again, I think I pointed out earlier that I thought it was prudent for us to look at and study some of the recommendations that were made by, I have the Senate President, I have Senator D'Alessandro, I have Speaker Shurtleff, and I have Representative Walnut that made recommendations. So either we agree to look at those recommendations, absorb them over the weekend, and then move the document forward. Whether we agree today on one or more of the items, that's not as critical. I think we just need to come to a resolution. What are we going to do today? Thank you.
Representative Walner.
Yes, thank you, Drake. So we've already been at this for about 2.5 hours today. I do think there were some materials that we got sort of late, right before we came into the meeting. And I think it would be better, personally, to put together a full package with the letter, and we would do that on Monday, where we would put everything out at the same time. I think it's hard to say here what's more urgent than what than one thing over another, and I think we need to see the total package before we start sending just one thing at a time out. So I'd like to wait. I personally would like to wait till Monday and put the whole thing together, and if we have to stay here on Monday until 10 o'clock at night putting together, we come prepared to do that.
Other comments? Let me see. Representative Hinch?
Yes. Thank you, Jerry. Based upon what I heard Representative Waldner say, I'm prepared to withdraw my motion at this time, and we can revisit it Monday along with the rest of the document so that we can put everything into proper priority order and then send the letter out. Thank you.
Speaker Shurtleff.
Thank you, Jerry. I just wanted to say to Representative Fincher, I thank him for the motion, but I think his last comments are well made. I think it's better that we look at the numbers over the weekend and make sure that we're prepared on Monday to just go forward and complete this document and take our votes. So thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't believe I see any other hands up on the screen at this point. Maybe I could just sort of try to summarize what I think I've heard today. The first conversation was to move the unemployment trust fund shortfall to the end of the document under future considerations. I believe that Senator Morse recommended moving $50 million, that same $50 million of unemployment to nonprofits to make it a total for nonprofits of $65 million, which Senator D'Alessandro agreed to. Representative Waldner asked to make sure that the $300 stipend includes child protection services and to take $25 million from the business support line to accomplish that. There was a discussion about funding for hospitals, and I believe the recommendation was to add to make that hospital line $75 million added to the $30 million that's there now for a total of $100 million.
Commissioner Little?
Yes, ma'am. Senator?
That was Senator Morse's recommendation. I differ with that. My recommendation was to just make that line $100 because I think the existing 30 is still in question, and I honestly, for the life of me, cannot figure out who's still in the queue and why some hospitals have not gotten responses. I just don't even know how to account for those dollars, other than to say that they're maybe halfway spent. I think the $100 million, from my estimation, needs to be a clean number, and that we can't rely on that 30.
Thank you. So $100 million, irrespective of the money in the health care fund for hospitals, if I heard that right. Representative Shurtleff would like the agriculture money out immediately, but if we do this entire document as presented, that $5 million is there. And I think that's all I have in my notes. Did I miss anything? I'm just trying to set a baseline for the conversation on Friday. Sorry, this is Friday, on Monday. And I know that there are several other items on the change memos that went out earlier today. Did that sound about right to folks for where we start on Monday? Representative Waldner. No, I'm sorry. I thought maybe we still had your hand up from before. Thoughts? Chairman Morse, any comments?
No, I think you let it go till Monday and try to get it wrapped up on Monday.
Very good. Senator Stussy, you have just raised your hand.
Yes, I agree. I think that we can very succinctly on Monday just go through the line items, finalize our recommendation, and get this out.
Very good. Any final comments?
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day, everybody. This is the Legislative Advisory Board of the Governor's Office, Ministry of Relief and Recovery, and our meeting for today is ending at 4:41. 3:41. I'm sorry. Thank you, Joe. 3:41. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.